So both sides, there's a sugya here. We started the Mishnah at the beginning of the sixth perek, and the Mishnah says, "Nafla legina v'nenes mishalemes mashenenes." And the Mishnah formulates two categories of tashlumin, two types of tashlumin. One type of tashlumin is for the benefit that was gained by this nefila legina, and we'll talk about the nefila legina in just a minute. And the other type of payment is not hanah, not benefit, but rather hezek.
Sorry?
Hezek. In other words, how much was damaged. So again, there are two concepts here. One is how much benefit, you can calculate how much benefit you gained. And number two, you can calculate how much damage was done. The benefit, in a certain sense, is from the mazik's perspective. What did the mazik gain? Whereas the nezikin, the hezek, is from the perspective of the nizak. How much did the nizak lose, if you follow? Now, what's important to know as we go through the sugya here on the bottom of Daf Nun Zayin Amud Beis of Rav is that when the Mishnah says Nafla Legina, we're talking about a Nefilas Ones. And again, just to refresh your memory, Rashi pointed this out on the fourth line in his Pirush on the Mishnah Nun Hay Amud Beis, Nafla Legina Ba Ones. And Rashi describes how this nefilah took place and why it was not attributable to any negligence or pshia on the part of the owner of the animal, but rather to a kind of a mishap that was unpredictable, unusual, in which the animal fell off a high place and rolled onto the gina. You can imagine if you close your eyes, picture the animal, you know, flying through the air, about to hit the ground. Obviously, from the perspective of the animal, this is a very dangerous situation. Says Rav, we're on Nun Zayin Amud Beis, and we're counting up from the bottom, about six lines up from the bottom.
You're translating onus as accidental? See, I translate onus as purpose.
I'm,
it was purposeful.
Unavoidable.
No, onus means circumstances beyond your control. That's based on a pasuk in Kitetze. It says, Vilanarol osasa dovar, we cannot punish her because it was a case of onus. So onus means circumstances beyond one's control. And in Ezekiel, the concept of onus is critical. Again, I don't want to get off on a tangent. There's a machlokas rishonim, a very fundamental machlokas rishonim, how far reaching the concept of onus is. Tosis is of the opinion that onus is such a far-reaching concept in the Zikin that it knows no exception. Onus is potter straight across the board. The Ramban says that the concept of onus has a limitation rule. It only goes as far as Mamon Hamazik. Mamon Hamazik. But it doesn't go as far as Adam Hamazik. And therefore the Ramban is of the opinion that with regard to Adam Hamazik, there's no mitigating circumstance of onus. That sheet of the Ramban cannot be maintained. So we're going to have to reinterpret the Ramban. Even the Ramban is going to have to admit that there's a certain point beyond which even in Adam HaMazik it's called onus. Okay, but that's a whole different discussion. Here we're talking about Mamon HaMazik, and with regard to Mamon HaMazik, everybody agrees, even the Ramban, that there's a tour of onus. And Rashi identifies this case of Nafla Legina is a case of onus. So therefore the owner of the animal doesn't pay Nezikin. And you and I might say, well, if he doesn't pay Nezikin, maybe he should pay Zippo. He should pay nothing. Kamashma on the mission, no. There's another category of payment. And that payment is not to be defined from the perspective of the Nizak, how much he lost, how much he was damaged, but rather, how much did the Mazik enjoy, how much benefit did he get, and we translate that into monetary terms, as a result of this collision, where the animal is falling down, is flying through the air, and its fall was cushioned by the tomato patch of the gina of the nizak.
What kind of hanah was there?
or the hano. Now here we have two. Again, it subdivides into two categories. According to Rav, the hano is going to be the amount that a person would pay for someone to save his animal on its way down from a major breakage, meaning the animal would break its back or its leg or whatever it might be. And how much would it be worth it to the owner of the shor to pay to avoid such an accident. Then we have another case where not that the animal was saved from any sort of breakage in its body, but the animal simply enjoyed eating the fruits that after it fell, you know, when an animal falls into a patch of vegetables, it's going to start eating. How much did the owner of the animal save himself by virtue of the fact he doesn't have to feed the animal? Okay, so let's go through the sugyan side and we'll try to get aggressive. There are a number of different elements here or features in this sugya that are quite interesting. Omar Rav. Rav says, b'nechvita. Meaning the hana that has to be reckoned, that has to be evaluated here, again from the perspective of the mazik, because we're dealing with a case where you don't pay to defray the loss of the nizak because you are not responsible for this nefila, but rather the gain or the benefit of the mazik. Says Rav, the animal nechvita, the animal was about to really break its back or whatever it is. I don't want to get too dramatic, but it was. Is going to get injured by the fall, and as a result of the fact that the nizak's vegetation is growing and it forms a kind of a natural cushion to prevent the breakage of the back of the animal or the leg of the animal, whatever it might be, that's the hana that we're paying for.
Who's paying?
The owner of the animal that fell. And this is a whole new parasha called hana, that you pay for hana. So for example, okay, now I'm deliberately misleading you in what I'm about to say, but it's going to be very helpful, even though that doesn't make any sense. But let's say, for example, a lion is about to attack my flock of sheep. And you come, you're a bystander, a third party, and you come and you chase away the lion. I will have to pay you, l'chora, again, this is good. This is the Havam, you know, okay? So Lamaskota, what I'm telling you is not right. But again, I want you to hear the Havam. You know? The Havam, you know, would be, in this paradigm case of Hana, how much would I be willing to pay someone to chase away this lion from attacking my flock, to saving my flock from the attack of the lion? And that's called Hana. And again, you and I may think, well, why should I have to pay someone for giving me benefit? He wasn't in my employment, we had no contractual agreement, he was not my shliach. So again, that's a sugya not here in Bava Kama, that's a sugya in Bava Metzia called Hayored Litoch Sada Shel Chaver. That's the famous name of the sugya. I don't know if you've heard of it. But basically, it's a very strange halakhic concept. I don't think it has any parallel in secular law, as far as we know, is that in halacha, if Reuven, uninvited, benefits Shimon, the cases where he goes down and he plants or he plows or he harvests the ground, then Reuven has rights to demand payment from Shimon. Again, exactly how much payment he could demand, whether he pays him according to the Torah, whether he pays him according to the Shevach, what if the Shevach exceeds the Torah exceeds the Shevach. That's the famous sugya of Yorid L'tol Sada Shel Chaver. I only mention that sugya as a little bit of background, that you shouldn't be put aback or shocked by the fact that a person could bill someone and force him to pay because he benefited him. Again, there are too many pronouns in that sentence, but if you fill in Reuven and Shimon, Reuven could bill Shimon for the benefit that Shimon enjoyed as a result of Reuven's uninvited action. Again, that sounds very strange, and in Western culture, we don't know of such a thing. You know, either I hired you and there was a contract, and hopefully you did a good job instead of ruining what you were meant to do, right? Or you want to be a good Samaritan. That's okay. You know, I don't have to pay you for being a good Samaritan. But the halacha doesn't work like that. The halacha is antithetical to that Western culture. Again, I don't have to pay you full wages. I got to pay you a different kind of thing, which again is a sugya b'matzi. So here, according to Rav, what we're looking at in our Mishnah of Nafla Legina, again, it was an afilas onus, so you can't hit the Baal HaShar or the Baal HaTzon as a mazik and sue him under the laws of Nezikim. But nevertheless, Rav says this is an example of that general concept of called Hana, in which you have to pay for Hana. The Gemara says, wait a minute, why did Rav have to tell me this whole story about Masha Nechvita, that you're going to pay for the preventative cushioning of the animal on its way down, and you know, and any benefits you got, forget about that. Why not just assume the animal started eating from the tomato patch? Pay the Nizak what you saved yourself by not having to feed dinner to your animal. So the Gemara says, Aval Achla, Afilu Mashanenes Enem Shalemes. This is a classical case of a diuk. Rav, by interpreting our Mishnah in this particular case, indicates that there's no chiyuv hanah to pay for the eating of the animal if the animal ate and feasted on the tomatoes. Why not? No. And again, the logic is this is counterintuitive. If I have to pay for hanah, let me pay for the food, the benefits that I got as the owner of the animal when my animal ate from your tomatoes. Why don't I have to pay for that hanah? So the Gemara thinks in the Havamina, everything that we're saying now is going to be turned around inside out. So this is all Havamina. But the Gemara thinks that Rav here is reflecting a different opinion of Rav. You know, this is what we call Lashitaso. How would you say Lashitaso in English? I don't know. He's consistent. I don't know. Consistent, you know, a reflection of a consistency in a previous case. Now, what's the previous case? Okay, this is a sugya. I think it's on Daf Membeis, but whatever it is, I don't want to waste time looking for the Daf. Rav says the following. If Shimon enters into Reuven's field and brings food into Reuven's field, and Reuven's animals get sick, they come down with a bad stomach problem, stomach virus, as a result of eating Shimon's fruits. What would you say intuitively, Rav Osai, before Rav?
You'd say that it's chayav.
He's chayav. I mean, misomcha. Who asked you to put your fruits into, you know, that's what Reuven should be saying to Shimon. Who invited you to come into my field with your fruits? And at the end of the day, my animal, says Reuven, the owner of the property, is visiting a veterinarian, you know, and I'm paying serious bills. Yeah. Rav comes up with a chiddush. Rav says lo hoy lo lech. The animal, meaning the animal of Reuven, the owner of the field, should not have eaten. You know, it's a very strange thing here. We're putting the animal on trial of here, you know, so to speak. And we're saying, well, you ate, you got sick, that's your fault. Ata pashata v'atzmacho. I should say at, if we're talking about a behemah, because behemah is lashon nekevah. You brought it upon yourself. You're suffering, excuse the phrase, from shilshul because you ate these payros, right? That's your problem. I don't have to pay for it.
Who told you to eat it?
Now, in Lavdashah terms, I think what Rav is saying is that there's a shared responsibility over here. You know, it's I didn't take my fruits and feed it and stuff it into your animal. Your animal made a quote-unquote decision to eat the fruits, and therefore you have to share responsibility on that. Intuitively, we would have said the opposite. Well, who asked you to come into my field with your fruits? But Rav says the opposite. Pumfak. Who asked you, meaning your animal, to eat these fruits? So the Gemara wants to assume that our Mishnah, the way Rav is interpreting, is Lishita, so Rav is being consistent. He's reflecting his general view of Mahoy Lo Lech, why was he eating? Meaning, that I don't have to be responsible for my animal eating. Again, I have to be responsible for my animal eating. That's one of the arba avos nezikah. That's called shame. If I had no right to take the animal into a place where the animal is going to eat. But our case, says Rav, is unique because the taking of the animal into the garden is completely innocuous. You know, it doesn't register on the nezikin scale. And why is that? Because it was in a nefilas ones. Well, if it's in a nefilas ones, my animal, again, I'm sorry for using this ambiguous term, had a right to be in your garden. Again, what does it mean I had a right to be in your garden? I mean, I'm not responsible for an animal finding itself in your garden. That was an onus. Circumstances beyond my control. Oh, see, now you're going to say to me, but your animal's eating up my fruits. Pay for that, Chach. And if you don't want to pay me din hazikin, at least Chach pay me din hanah. The answer is, the animal didn't have to eat. If the animal ate, that's the animal's, you know, cheshbon. I am not responsible for the animal eating. So the Gemara says, "Avol ochlo afilu mashenenes enem shalem is lema Rav l'tamei." Should we assume Rav is going lishitoso? The Amar Rav. Rav says that if let's say Shimon brings his fruits into Ruvain's field, and Ruvain's animal eats these fruits, Shimon doesn't have to pay, even though Reuven's animal got very sick by eating these fruits. Why? Says Rav, the famous statement of Rav, Hoyelo shelo tochal. It's not my problem if your animal eats. Who told your animal to eat? I didn't stuff the food into your animal's mouth. Here also, the owner of the behemoth that fell from on high is going to claim that I'm not chayv for the nefilah because the nefilah itself was bonus. El what I should be chayv to pay you for the hanah because the animal's eating is, I didn't want the animal to eat. The animal ate on its own volition. In other words, again, the lovedness here is, in this line of the Gemara, is that the machayv of shame is only through nezikin. There cannot be a machayv of shame through hanah. When you're dealing with nezikin and there was a pshia, that's called shame. What was I doing with my animal in your backyard? I had no right to take my animal into your backyard, and if I have to pay for achila. But if my animal is in your backyard, that's where it was born, meaning that's where yesh me'ayin it is, because I'm not responsible for an achila's onus when it fell from a god, then achila per se is not a machayev. Why? Because I have right to say the animal is operating, is eating on its own volition. Says the Gemara, this makes no sense whatsoever. The first statement of Rav and this understanding of Rav here have nothing in common. Ein lahashvos. The hashva is completely off base. Amri, says the Gemara. Hachiyash, let's analyze this. Let's compare the two cases. Eimar diomar Rav hasam hayolo shelo tochal. Where does Rav apply this principle of hayolo shelo tochal? Hecha de itazka he. When the animal that ate damaged itself, I have to pay for your animal damaging itself. Matzi amale mari de peri lo mishalmano. I'm not going to pay you because your animal ate my fruits and damaged itself and it got a bellyache because it ate my fruits. But lazuki hi achrine. But that's not this case. This case is where my animal took your fruits and ate your fruits. Not that your animal ate my fruits. If your animal ate my fruits, who told your animal to eat my fruits? I'm not responsible for that. But if my animal eats your fruits, is Pture Lishlubi Miyomar? Did Rav ever make a statement that you're potter for paying for the hanah at least? Again, not towards the Zika because of the Filus Onus, but Chach pay for the hanah when your animal went ahead and ate mine. So again, it all depends on who's the owner of the animal that ate. If the owner of the animal of that ate is the Nizak because as a result of this animal eating, the animal got sick, that's one thing. Then in Din and Ezekiel, Rav comes up with this new principle, lo hayelo lechol. What's the exact language? Hayelo shalot tochal. you know, I don't have to pay for your animal damaging itself. If your animal has suicidal tendencies, that's not my fault. Now, I'm just using that lasabris ozen, that's one. But on the other hand, if my animal ate from your tomato patch, certainly I have to pay for that hanor. So now the Gemara is going to make a 180 degree turnaround and reinterpret Rav. Ella, says the Gemara, and here we're going to turn to Daf Nun Ches Amud Aleph, lo mi boy kama. That's not, Rav didn't mean to say Dafka, it's a case where the animal's fall was broken by the cushioning of the vegetables and then you pay for the hanor. No, even in that case you pay for the hanor. Lo mi boy achla demishal lemes maisha nenes. Certainly in a case where you're not chayav for nezikin because the nefilah was in the field's onus, but the animal ate and ate and ate and fressed up, you have to pay for that because you had the hanor. Aval nechbeta, you might think in this havamina that to bill the owner of the tzon for the fall, for the cushioning of the fall and saving it from being smashed, Ema, I might think, Mavriach Ari Minichse Chaverohu, Umashenenes Nami Lo Meshalem Komashmon. Oh, this is the case I gave you before. It's called Mavriach Ari. Mavriach Ari means the lion is about to attack your herd, your flock, and I chase it away. And the Gemara says that Mavriach Ari, even though he did you a great favor, but nevertheless, he can't bill you for that. Imagine the great hanor that you got, that this lion didn't pounce on your sheep. It's not collectible. That's what we call an act of hatzolah, which is called an act of a mitzvah. Again, I don't like to use the term from a different religion, but it's a good Samaritan act. I'm just using it with Saberta Ozen. And when you do a mitzvah, you can't bill someone for a mitzvah. I know you have 1,000 kashas on that. Again, in the case of my mitzvah, I don't get paid that much, so it's not even relevant to talk. I'm just kidding. Maybe I'm not kidding. But, but you know, all cases of a mile and also, what do you call it, religious services, what else can I think of? A shoychet, a rav, a darshan, a malamed, all these cases, it's a big, big problem how they can take money for a mitzvah and hopefully they don't forfeit the mitzvah. My father, for example, was a chaplain in Coney Island Hospital in Brooklyn, New York, for the Jewish patients. And the question is, did he forfeit the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim by getting a salary check as a chaplain? So the post can write one of two ways. Either you get something called Schar Batola, go figure what that means.
What?
Batola, whatever that means, I'm not getting into that. Or maybe he stays a little bit longer. In other words, as far as the municipalities, no, the hospital regulations say he doesn't have to sit down, you know, he just goes in and out. So if the chaplain, you know, sits down and he extends his visit, that's why he has a right. He has a right to the mitzvah. He doesn't forfeit the mitzvah by taking a salary. But in this case of Mavriach Ari, since the person is obligated to do whatever he can to prevent someone else's damage, that's called Hashavas Aveda. Hashavas Aveda, mind you, is not limited to returning a lost object. Preventing someone from financial loss, the mitzvah d'oraisa of Hashavas Aveda. Therefore, the Mavriach Ari cannot charge for his services. Now, when I say the Mavriach Ari cannot charge for his services, what do I mean? Did he spend any money? Or was it just physical services? If it was just physical services, I could begin to comprehend that, you know, you did a physical act at Tirchas Aguf, and that's a mitzvah per se. That's gufish of mitzvah. You can't charge for that, because that would undermine the mitzvah. Or moreover, the fact that you're obligated to do so, that takes away your rights to collect money. But if he spent money, right, to be Mavriach Ari, like the Gemara is going to have a case where a person saw that his friend's yayin was spilling all over the place. So he spilled out his dvash, which is cheaper than yayin, in order to empty his pot to catch the yayin. So there he took a loss. Or for example, in our case, right? Your tomato patches break the fall of my shar. So you're a mavriach ari. You're actually doing a hatsola on my mama, kneeling on my shar. It's about to break its back. It's flying through the air, and you come with a cushion, namely the tomato patches. But on the other hand, you're taking a loss. So if it was only Tirchas HaGuf, which obviously doesn't apply in this case, the owner of the Gino is not even aware of the fact that this animal dropped out of the 10th floor of the building. He doesn't know about it. So where's he being Mavriach Hari? And moreover, he's suffering a financial loss. Doesn't he have a right to be compensated for his loss? So the Gemara says the following. V'eima hachinami. So wait a second. Rav says that our Mishnah establishes that mishalemes mashenenes, when the animal falls, benefilas ones, the owner of that animal will pay. He won't pay full damages for the loss of the tomato patch, but chot shall pay hano. Why not say mavriach hari? You gave me such a good argument why Rav wanted to say lo mi boy. It goes without saying that if Shimon's animal ate from the tomatoes of Reuven, he has to pay that hano to Reuven. But I want to tell you greater chiddush that even if the tomatoes were not eaten, they were only there as a cushion to break his fall and save the animal, even in such a case he has to pay for the hano. Ma'o detem, I would have thought, mavriach hari b'nechsei chavero, kamashmano, he has to pay. Affecting Gemara, why? I mean, you gave me such a good argument, we have this universal principle of mavriach hari, why not apply it here? So the Gemara gives two answers. The first answer is mavriach hari minichse chavero midaitohu. When a person makes an intelligent decision that he's going to be mavriach hari, he's going to save Yenim's flock, then he is doing it as a maisa mitzvah. And if he does it as a mitzvah of hashavas aveda to be matzil someone else's possessions, then he doesn't take money for that. Here, it's not midaito. And if it's not midaito, the owner of the gina is not aware of the fact that somebody's animal is falling into his tomato patch. Therefore, that's not called mavriach hari.
Means no mitzvah.
And it sounds like he gets no mitzvah for it. Then the Gemara says, "Hi, love midaito. Inami." Another answer: mavriach hari minichsei chaver less lep seida. Hi, islay pseida. The halach of mitzvah applies as a physical tircha, and for that I can't bill you. But if I spend money to save you from a loss, I have a right to collect something from you. Again, how much I collect from you is very complex. I can't collect the full value of what I lost, but at least I can collect the hana. Or the lower of the two I can collect. You know, if the hana exceeds beyond the hotzah, the hefseid of the matzil. Tosis here, Dibra Maschil Inami, which is this long, gigantic Tosis that takes up the entire page, establishes that there's no machlokus between the two Teirutz of the Gemara. And basically, it's A plus B. In other words, there are two conditions that have to be met in order to remove, to be mafkia, and cancel this principle of mavriach ari. Number one, it's got to be shalom midaito, and number two, it has to be without a hefse. I'm sorry, it's got to be, in order to be mavriach hari, it's got to be midaito, and it's got to be without a hefseid. So we don't see, says Tosus, and again, that's this whole Tosus and all his proofs from here, there, and elsewhere, we don't see here a machlokas between the two teirutz, which is the classical way, you know, a lamdin, when he learns a gemara like this, he racked his brains. What's the machlokas between the first answer and the second answer? No. Tosus insists that both answers form one unit. The gemara has the right to say that this is not mavriach hari, for one of two reasons, because mavriach hari requires that you fill, you check off two different conditions. Number one, he did it midaito, and number two, he did it without any hefseid. In our case, there are two reasons why mavriach hari doesn't apply. In other words, there are two explanations as to why the Mishnah says mishalemes mashenenes. One is because there's no mavriach hari, it was shalom midaito. So that condition of midaito wasn't fulfilled. Number two, it's not mavriach hari for a different reason, because here he suffered a hefseid, and he has a right to demand reimbursement for his hefseid. Whereas mavriach hari is a case where it's just tirchas haguf, which is pure mitzvah, and he has no right to demand payment for a pure mitzvah, despite the hanor that the nitzol received.
Right. Is it possible? Why can't? Is there another possibility of analyzing the difference between that and mavriach hari? Is because mavriach hari is a symmetrical union. In other words, he's paid for because he's mavriach. Just the same way he would have to pay them if he brought the Ari there to do it. But in the case of the fall, if his bushes were very had big points on it, and the animal was actually hurt more from it, the Bala Sada wouldn't have to pay the Bala Behema because he actually had a takola there. So therefore, since it's not symmetrical, he can't get paid in the other direction either.
I don't know. I'm not sure. But in any event, just let me understand what I do understand, okay. Alan, from the Gemara, right. Is that there are two conditions, says Tosfos, that have to be met in order to apply the principle of Mavriach Ri and exempt the Nitzol from payment. One condition is it's got to be that the Mavriach was Midaito, and that triggers in and that triggers off the mitzvah. But if we're Shalom Midaito, then the Mavriach has rights to collect for the Hatzolah. And number two, in order to apply the principle of Mavriach Ri, which alleviates the Nitzol of payment, it's got to be Shalom Behefset, that the Mavriach did not lose anything out of pocket when he was Mavriach. But if he went beyond just physical tircha, and he was Mavriach with a Hefset, then the Mavriach has rights to collect monies. And therefore, what Rav is saying is that for two reasons, our Mishnah would apply Mishalemes Mashenenes, where the Nisal has to pay, and the Matzil has a right to collect some money, which is called Hanoah, for one of two reasons. Either because, in this case, the owner of the tomato patch was not deliberately aware of his role and actively decided to be a matzil, and therefore the mitzvah element is completely removed and you're left with pure dinim ominous, which is called hanah. Or, says Rav, because in our case, the matzil, meaning the owner of the gina, he suffered a financial loss as a result of this hatzol. That's not called mavriach ri. That's the first fascinating dimension of this sugya. But now we go on to something equally exciting, I think. You know, we haven't discussed really the question of why this nefila is called an onus. What makes this nefila onus? For example, let me ask a naive question. How did the animal get up to this high place? Maybe the owner of the animal should have been more careful. He knows that Yenom, you know, his neighbor has a tomato patch or whatever he's growing there. He doesn't want this animal to fall in there. In other words, when I own an animal, I have to be worried about two things. Selfishly, I have to be worried about the animal, that the animal shouldn't be damaged. Okay, so the guy is a masochist, so he took his animal up to the top of a roof, and if one leg goes over the edge of the roof, it's going to fall and the animal is going to die. So he's a man. What do I care? You know, if he was the opposite of Nafshi, he was Mafshin himself. But there's another responsibility here, and that's towards the next guy. Because if your animal falls from a high place, it's going to damage someone. So what made you into a nefil? What made this nefil into a nefilas onus?
Nafshi is another reason that they're working on the road, and the road was a little bit higher than the field, and it rolled off the.
Right, but on the other hand, if the road is higher than the field, shouldn't you have been watching your animal not to take it on this very high road, or at least to guide it, you know, to rope it down? So here we have machlokus in the Gemara. The Gemara says the following: Heichi nafil. How did this animal fall from this high place? Rav Kahan Omar shehuchlaka b'meimei ragleha. This was a kind of unforeseen nefila. The animal urinated, and the animal now tripped on its own wet meraglion. You know, that far, we don't expect you, you know, within a short period of time, you're taking the animal in a high place for, 5 minutes, whatever it is, to expect that, boom, you know, exactly that time, the animal's going to roll onto its meraglion. So when you learn the sugi of Meraglayim, it appears all over Shas. You know, Meraglayim is a very interesting phenomenon in the Torah, because the Torah is not embarrassed about anything. You'll have Meraglayim in Masech the Brachas about tefillah, when you're allowed to daven, when you're not. You'll have Baltashchis if you have to urinate and you hold it in. You'll have urine in Hilchas Tuma Vitara, whether it's one of the Machshirim. Wherever you turn, you'll always see a sugi about Meraglayim, but I didn't think I would find one here in Masech the Bava Kama. That was a Kiddush to me. Okay. That was just Alverach Milsa de Vdichusa.
It's in Peter Mokhtaris.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And for the Ketores also, Masech the Krisus. Fine, that's Rav Kahan. The names are important here. Then we have Rav Omar, Shedechafasa Chaverta. In other words, there's a stream or a chain of animals, let's say going single file up this very narrow, you know, high place, and the animal from behind pushes the animal in front of it. Says the Gemara, very interesting analysis. According to Rava, certainly that would be an onus, in which case he's not chayef in Ezekiel, and he's only chayef in Noah. Umad diomer but Rav Kahana shehuchlukah b'meimei ragleha, that's considered onus. We don't expect the bialim to foresee that it's going to slip on the meimei raglayim. Avol dachafsa chaverta pasha umishalemis mashi zika. That's already an Ezekiel, my friend. You know, you're taking your animal single file up a very narrow ascent. Right? Be very careful about that. You know, it's very natural that one animal will push the other animal. Even human beings, when they walk single file, you know, one pushes the other one from behind.
But who pushed who?
The animal of the bialim, right, in the back of the line, pushed the animal of the bialim on the front of the line, and the animal on the front of the line now fell over the high ramp. So that, says Rava, is considered an ones, and Rav Kahana is saying, no, my case of an ones would not include your case. Why? The amale, the owner of the gina, you know, the animal fell to the gina, has a right to turn to the owner of the animal and say, Iboilach avure chada chada. You should have led your animals one at a time. Not, you know, like herd style, one after the other in the way they could push it. So again, according to Rav Kahana, there's an element of pshia here in Rav's nefila of dachfasa chaverta. Rav, on the other hand, says, no, this is not called pshia. He didn't expect that one animal would push the other animal. Honestly, I like Rav Kahana a lot better than Rav in this case. The Gemara says the following. Oh, so one second. Now, I wanted to point out that this Gemara here, about a machlokas, about whether he has to take his animals one by one, really finds its source in Masechta Bava Metzia Tzadik Gimel. There, Rav Papa discusses the case of a roeh, of a shepherd. What happens if the shepherd is leading his animals and one from behind pushes the one from the front line and the one from the front line gets hurt? Does the roeh have to pay damages in this case? So if you take a look in the Rush says that Gemara in Bava Metzia is not relevant to our discussion. Why? He wants to claim that Rava would argue that a roeh is different. Why? A roeh is paid for his shmira. That makes him into the status of what, Rav Osai? A shomer sachar. Says the Rush, a shomer sachar is chayav in shmira ma'ula. We've already established, if you recall, Rav Osai, at the beginning of this parak, that dalid var miyata Torah b'shmirasan, and one of them is shame. And the Torah lowered the standard and requirement to shmir to that mishmira p'chusa. Say no chinami, Rav Papa, Masechta Bava Makam and Tzadik Gimel is of the opinion that a roeh will be chayav if the back animal pushes the front animal, the front animal is damaged. Because as a shomer sachar, he's required to provide a higher level of shmira mu'ula. That's not a steer to Rava. Rava is talking about shame. Obviously, when I lead my animal, I have to make sure it doesn't eat from someone else's pasture. But that shmira that I have to provide to prevent shame, that only reaches the level of shmira p'chusa. And therefore, Rava claims that although a roeh would be chayev, he has to, you know, that's what he's paid for, to take each animal single file. Most people, with regard to their own sheep, they don't have to take their sheep single file. So that's, I wanted to point out to Rush. Now, Rav Osai, until this point, I think we've been dealing mostly with svara. What I mean is intuitive and rational logic. And most of Nezikin, well, I don't know most of Nezikin, but a large chunk of Nezikin is intuitively logical. You know, if a person owns a damager, he should be paying for the damage. But what we're about to learn, I'm prejudicing you in the way I understand the sugya, so maybe you'll disagree with me, which is fine. I think what we're about to learn is that there's another element in Ezekiel that simply defies human logic. Now, I'm not saying it's against, you know, the rational. I don't understand paraduma, so I'm in good company. Shlomo Mel did not understand paraduma. It doesn't mean that there's no logic to paraduma, but it's a human divine it's a divine logic, not a human logic. So it's not intuitive. In Ezekiel, we very rarely, I think, from my limited experience in Ezekiel, confront this kind of chok, this gzeres hakosav svar. You know, the Rambam asks himself, why do we blow the shofar of an aisle on Rosh Hashanah? And the Rambam says, it's a gzeres hakosav. Rack your brains, you want to find the remez yesh v'dova, it reminds HaKadosh Baruch Hu HaKeis, it's fine. But at the end of the day, you'll never ever really understand why we blow that shofar shel aisle on Rosh Hashanah. And the Rambam repeats himself in many, many different cases. That's in the Mishnah Torah. Again, he takes on a new personality when he gets to his more nevuchim. You know, the Rambam is a split personality, so to speak. You know, there's no gzeres hakosim in more nevuchim. That doesn't appear. It appears all over the place in the Mishnah Torah. Here I think we're about to embark upon what I call gzeres hakosim. Omar Rav Kahan, Lo shanu ela bi osa aruga. Aval me'aruga la'aruga mishalemes mashi hizika. I'm going to take a deep breath and read Rabbi Yochanan, and then we'll come back to the top. Rabbi Yochanan Omar, afilu me'aruga la'aruga v'afilu kol ayom kulo ad sheteitze v'tachzor l'das. What's going on over here? I understand that in Nefilas Onis, whether it's Rav Kahana's Nefilas Onis in Meve Ragleo, whether it's Rav's Nefilas Onis, even in the case of Doch Vasa, okay, you're not chayav for the first moment. I'll give you 5 minutes, I'll give you 10 minutes that the animal is fressing away in Yenem's Gina. But, my friend, at some point, assuming you know that your animal is there, right, because you were shepherding the animal, I don't mean shepherding in the official sense, get your animal out of there before it eats up the whole tomato, you know, field. You know what I'm saying? So Rav Kahana says, you know what? It all depends on aruga la aruga. We'll call it a patch. You know, I don't know what word I want to use here.
Patch.
A patch is good? Good. So we'll call it a patch. There's something called a tomato patch, right? You have lines, you know, you have rows. As long as the animal is within one row, we're going to give you, you know, that free rope here that you're not going to pay for Nezikin. Again, you'll always pay for Hanah, but you're not going to pay for Nezikin. But then, the animal picks itself up from one aruga. You know, it's you know, fressed away in one aruga. Now it's in a second aruga. Oh, on that, my friend, by that time you have to get your animal out of here. Comes along Rabbi Yochanan, and he says, name. The animal came into the field, let it eat from dawn to dusk, from Vasikin until Chatzos Alayla, and you don't have to pay for damages, even though you know about the animal. And I ask you the following question, does this make rational sense? Lomi boy, I have no clue how to understand Rabbi Yochanan, let the animal fress away the whole day. I don't even understand Rav Kahana. Rav Kahana is saying, let it go within, you know, from one apple to the next apple, from one tomato to the next apple, as long as it's in the same aruga. The whole thing doesn't make sense. Let's read it again. Amar Rav Kahana, lo shanu, when is he potter from tashlumen el bios aruga? As long as he keeps eating and eating and eating within the same aruga. Avol me aruga la aruga, mishalemes mashi zika. At some point, my friend, get down on all fours, you know, fly into it, take a helicopter down to your friend's gino, and get the animal out of there, retrieve your animal. Comes along Rabbi Yochanan, he says, Nain, you know what, I'm very calm about this. May aruga la aruga filu kol ayom kulo, let him eat as much as he wants for the whole day. I'm adding the word bailim here, meaning until the bailim are aware of the fact that it's out of the field and it went back into the field, and he's aware of the fact that it goes back into the field. So in other words, he's only going to be chayef and Ezekiel when two conditions are met. Number one, the bailim are notified that the animal is out of the field, and number two, the animal went back into the field, and that the bailim are aware of that. If you have both A and B, then says Rabbi Yochanan, all of a sudden he pays for Nezik. Omar Rav Papa, lo tema ad sheteitze ledas v'tachso ledas elikemet sheyotzo ledas af bishachazur shalo ledas. Says Rav Papa, wait a minute. Okay, Rav Yochanan says, let it eat and fress away the whole day, but once it leaves the field and he knows about it, then he becomes responsible for Nezik, and if the animal goes back, but only, Rav Pope is asking this as a rhetorical question, but only if the bailim are aware of the fact that the animal went back in, no, that far you don't have to go. My timer, even though the animal went back, the guy got his animal back into the corral, it was fenced up, he did his shmirah, everything is nice and dandy. No. If the animal goes back into the same garden, then he's chayev. My timer, the owner lay, because the owner of the field, of the garden has a right to say, came in the yolfa. What does yolfa mean? Yalfina means to learn, right? The animal learned where the good food is. It's called Amos the Mishtam to Lahasam Rata. Whenever the animal can get free, it's dying to go back to that same patch. And therefore, Shmira Pchus is not enough. Nol Bifanel Karoi would not be sufficient. You have to upgrade the level of Shmira and provide a Shmira Ma'ula. But before we get to Rav Papa, I just want to understand what's going on here in Rav Kahana and in Rav Yochanan. So I have here a note, again from the Rosh. The Rosh in Bava Kamma is very important. The Rosh says that Lechora, he's a posheh shelo hotziya misham. Why shouldn't he be chai for Nezikin as a posheh for not bringing the animal out? Says the Rosh, ein ze v'shilach ubir. Ein ze v'shilach ubir. Right, the Torah says in the parish of Shein V'Regel, v'shilach and ubir. He says, since he was onus on the nefilah, there's no v'shilach ubir. So
there's no shame.
What's the machlokas, asks the Rosh, between Rav Kahana and Rav Yochanan? The Torah says v'shilach ubir b'stei acher. At what point do we say that it's a stei acher and now it's called v'shilach? On the original v'shilach, he was an onus. That's on one sotah. But at what point do we define it as if it was v'shilach because he went into a different sotah? You know, at what point are we mafkir the chalushem ones here? Says the Rosh, according to Rav Kahana, each aruga is considered a separate sada. Mashenkin, he says, according to Rav Yochanan, kol asada nechsheves kisada achas afilu kam v'kam arugos. But Rav Osa, what I'm trying to suggest to you here is that we're dealing with a whole nother variable here, what I call exeris hakosif. The Rosh is clearly, in my humble opinion, unhappy with this Gemara. He's an unhappy camper. What are you talking about? There's a pshia, says the Rosh over here. He's going to let his animal just fress away? It doesn't make any bit of sense. On the original nefilah, fine. He doesn't know about it. Give him a little bit of rope. And therefore, he only pays hanah. He doesn't pay nezikin. But at some point or another, you know, let's face music. You know, the cold water is splashing his face. You know that this animal. You're a posheif. You don't stop. You know, the fire is burning. You know, says the Rosh. There's a pasuk here. The pasuk says ubir. If the animal fell ba'ones, again, Mark Yisli, Rav Kahana, and Rav, exactly what constitutes an afilus ones, that's not called ubir, that's not called ushilach. But that's only in the first field. Once it goes into a second field, and you no longer have the tainus ones, because you're very well aware, you were notified with due notice that it went into a different field, you can't claim that there's no ubir, there's no ushilach. On the first Sunday, you could say, well, it was an afilas onus. That's not called ubir. That's not called v'shila. What?
It's not called the shilach.
Well, again, I'm not going to Shein and Regel here. Right? The shilach is Regel, and Ubir is Shein, right? So I'm using the whole pasuk. But if you want, we can talk about Ubir because we're talking about Shein here. When is it called Ubir b'steyacher? That's only. So I could say there's a hafka. It's not called Ubir b'steyacher in the first Sada because there it was in the filas ones. So it's not Ke'en. You remember the Gemara on Daf Nunhei Ad Ovi Ke'en Ubir, right? That you sent the animal. Fine, but now it's in a different Sada, my friend. You can no longer claim it's not an Ubir. And the Machlok, says the Rosh, is what constitutes a Sada Achim. Do we say from one aruga to another aruga within the same field is considered a new Sada? Or do we say no, all the arugas in one field are considered one field? That's before we get to Rav Papa. Now we get to Rav Papa, and Rav Papa says that Rav Yochanan should not be taken too far or too literally. Rav Yochanan seems to be saying that he's only going to be chayav when the animal goes back into the field the second time with das. Chazra midas, then he's chayav. Says Rav Papa, that's intolerable. Das kenet zayin, it's impossible. He's chayav when the animal goes back even without das. Meaning, the Bailam now provided Shmira, he retrieved this animal, put it up in the, you know, locked it up in the pen, Nal b'fanei karoy, he provided a Shmir p'chusa, and therefore you might think, says Rav Papa, that if the animal breaks loose and goes back into the field, and reiterates, you know, repeats what it did on the first round, you're potter, because you provided Shmir p'chusa, and that's shame. No, in this case, you're going to be required to provide Shmir Ma'ula because the animal knows exactly where the good life is. I want to tell you a story. My wife and I were in the Rockies. We didn't go as far as Alaska, but we were in the Rockies. And we had a little bit of a guide with one of the, the officials, you know.
Ranger.
The rangers, exactly, one of the rangers. And she shows us a bear, a grizzly bear, dead, of course, but, you know, the whole skin of the grizzly bear. It's quite frightening when you see it in front of your eyes. And she tells us the story of the grizzly bear.
It's just the skin?
Yeah, but with the face. I mean, the whole, not the rest of the body, but just, you know, flat. And why did the ranger show us this? I didn't know that she was a shliach from HaKadosh Baruch Hu to give me a musa shmuz, but that's what she gave me, a musa shmuz. What was the story with this grizzly bear? How did it die? It was killed by the rangers. What happened? The grizzly bear smelled a barbecue of one of the, what do you call those vans? The
RV.
Is that what they call the RVs? That they link them up to the RVs. And the grizzly bear, which is very dangerous because of the smell, a grizzly bear lives on berries. 250,000 bushels of berries a day. I don't know, something wild. A grizzly bear doesn't eat meat, but naturally. But, you know, there's a taiva for meat. And when it smells... So what happened? Because it was so dangerous, because it went to where the, you know, the human beings were, so they took the grizzly bear and they placed it about 500 miles away from that camp. The very next night, the bear was back in that very same camp. So they took the bear 5,000 miles away. I'm exaggerating, but I don't remember how many miles it was, so I'm exaggerating, but really far. And sure enough, the grizzly bear came back to that exact same place. And little did I know, first of all, there's a whole Musa Shmuz here about Taiva and so on, but little did I know that story that the ranger told me about 5-6 years ago when I was in the Rockies would help me understand this Gemara. So again, just to summarize Rav Papa is saying once the animal knows where the good food is, you cannot fulfill Shmira on a lower level of Shmira P'chusa. You got to lock this animal up with every lock, you know, you can find and provide a Shmira P'chusa, a Shmira Ma'u. Yarda Kedarka V'Izika M'Shalemes Mashi Izika. Boy Rav Yirmiya. Here's an interesting song. There's so many different features to this sugya. Yarda kedarka v'zika b'mei leita. The animal gave birth, and the placenta broke, right, the breaking of the water, and the water itself caused the hezek. There's a whole discussion here in the Rishonim, the Achronim, about tsroros. Is this called charamazik? Is this called tsroros? You pay chatzin hezek, mezek sholim. Mahu. In other words, the premise of this sugya of Rav Yirmiya is the following. By the way, if anybody is familiar with Rav Yirmiya, anytime he asks a question, what's the ultimate answer?
Teiku.
Every Rav Yirmiyan shah, so this is no exception. So Rav Yirmiya wants to know the following. Okay, look, you didn't have to assume that the animal would give birth at that particular moment. You know, you're not a Navi. But on the other hand, the animal was not contained properly. It was Yarda Kedarka. Yarda Kedarka is the opposite of what? Of Nafla. Nefila is Nefilas Onis. Yarda Kedarka is a Pshia. Again, now normally Pshia means that you foresee what's going to happen. Here, that Ezekiel B'Meleda, that's not something that you would foresee. So what's the suffix of Rav Yirmiya? Says the Gemara the following: Aliba demandi Omar tchiloso b'pshia v'sof bonus chayev. This is sugi in the third parak of Mabmitzia. Lo tiboylecha. He was a poshea. Why was he poshea? Because the animal walked into Yenim's tomato patch. Right? You didn't provide the proper shmira, even from a ruach mitzuya, even the lowest level of shmira p'chusa. And therefore, even though at the end of the day, the hezek was not through the achila, which was foreseen, but rather through the mei leda, which is an ones, but it's chilasim v'shiv v'sof bonus. In other words, according to one man, the Omar, in Masechta Bava Metzia, once you're poshea, that's it, my friend. The ptur in Ezekiel is because of your kiyum shmira. If you weren't makayim shmira, there's no ptur. You're chai for everything, even an ones. But Kiti Boilach, where was Rav Yirmiya doubting it? Alima demand the Omer Tchilas of Meshiva Sof Bonus Potur. My. Me, Amri, and should we say, gave him the Tchilas of Meshiva Sof Bonus Potur. Here he should be Potur because at the end of the day, the Nezek of May, later was what? Was Ones. Oh, Dilma, maybe here everyone would agree that Yechayv. Why? Kulap Shiahu, they came in the Kochazi, the Kravale Lamela. You see that the animal is in the advanced stages of pregnancy. It's about to give birth. Iboile Linature, it should have given a higher level of Shmira. It should have been providing a higher level of Shmira. Ule Istamure Bigava. No, since he sees that it's close to giving birth, and he should realize and consider the fact that it's going to give birth, or it might give birth. Then is Tamuri Bagavoy, he's got to do a higher level of Shmira. And even if I hold Chilas Mashiva so far bonus potter, here it's one long Shia. Teku. And now, Rabosa, we get to the most profound sugya of Hanoah, which is not Hanoah, excuse me. But I'm sorry, my apologies. We're making a siyum on Hanoah, and now we're going into Ezekiel, okay? Because we're no longer in the field of Ones, but rather Yarda Kedark of Ezekiel. So, again, intuitively, what would you say? The animal ate a tomato patch. How would you evaluate the damage? How much should he pay? How much is worth? To take a bushel of tomatoes into the shuk and find out what they sell for. Says the Mishnah name, that would be too harsh on the mazik. But rather, what we're going to do is shamin beis sa. Again, I'm just reiterating the Mishnah. If you want to turn back to the Mishnah, shamin beis sa biosa sa the kamay sa yofa the kamay yofa. We're not going to evaluate this loss of X number of fruits or vegetables as they are worth inherently on the market, but rather we're going to do what I call a kinyan agav. You know, so we're going to evaluate what was the loss to a larger tract of a field because now that field no longer has that patch of tomatoes on it; they've been destroyed. And that's called a beis sah. And I told you before, a beis sah is a very large span. It's a very large area. It's 50 amos square. So the Gemara says, Minani Mili. I love this question. Because what does Minani Mili tell me? That it's not rational. This is not humanly intuitive. Again, we're smacking up with Xeris HaKosim. By the way, if I would have to write an essay on the Masechta Bava Kamma, my essay would be the following: to what extent is Bava Kama based on, or the laws of Nezikin based on Gzeiros HaKos? I think it would be a fascinating essay. Where does logic take me, and where does it end in the world of halacha? Omar of Masna, the Omar Kra, Ubir Biste Acher, Milamed Sheshomin Al Gav Soda Acher, that we don't evaluate the loss in the fruits per se on the market, but rather Agav, what was the field, the large expanse of the field, how did it depreciate on the market as a sellable field, if you were to sell the field? And that's why the Torah says Biste Acher, meaning don't look at this particular loss, but the loss as if it were a different sada. But again, the emphasis here is on the sada. It doesn't say ubir biaruga, it biar bisada. So the Gemara says, what are you talking about? Hi, ubir bistayachami boile, I need it for something else. This is the most famous or the most fundamental halacha in Shein. Shein is only chayv b'rishus hanizak, it's not chayv in rishus harabim, which itself is a fascinating halacha. You know, if I take my animal in rishus harabim in a public domain and it eats your tomatoes, I don't have to pay for that, not even a dime. How do we know such a thing? Because the Torah says ubir b'stei acher. Stei acher means the son that's owned by someone, it's private ownership. But lafuke, to the exclusion of rishus harabim, where you don't pay damages for shein. So I need ubir b'stei acher. No, it's the underlying premise is that a pasuk can generate one halacha, but not two halachas. You can't reuse a pasuk. Says the Gemara in Cain, if the Torah was only interested in teaching me that your part of rishus harabim lichtov rachmana, the Torah should have said ubir b'stei chavero. Chavero means privately owned. Inami, it could have said stay acher. It didn't say have to say ubir b'stei acher. My, why does it say ubir b'stei acher? And the answer is sheshomen al gav soda acher. So it means that this pasuk is not coming to exclude rishus harabim, but we have diyukim in the pasuk and extra words which indicate that it's coming to teach you a din in shuma. Shuma means how do we evaluate the price of the compensation that the mazik has to pay the nizak? And the answer is al gav soda acher. So now the Gemara asks, wait a minute, v'ema kule lahachi hudiyasa. You know, you made such a strong case that the word stay acher means agav stay acher, shomen al gav stay acher. So then I don't have a pasuk now for the exclusion of rishus harabim, because your diuk in the pasuk is that the pasuk obviously is teaching me halach and shuma. Otherwise, it would have said it would be a bistei chavero if it was only teaching me the halacha of rishus harabim, the exclusion of rishus harabim. Is lafuke rishus harabim nolan? So again, the Gemara says, all right, you've convinced me that the thrust of this drasha is to derive the halacha of shomen al gavi stei acher, but now I have to ask the opposite question. So how do I use this very same pasuk to teach me that you're part of rishus harabim? In Cain, the Gemara now has to say that we have two different diyukim in the pasuk. If the pasuk is only coming to teach me the halacha of shuma, lichtevei rachmana gavi tashlumin, there are two parts to the pasuk of shein. One part of the pasuk is v'shilach ubir b'stei acher. Correct? That's what we call the Maisa Nezek. And as the Torah is describing the actual Hezek that took place. And then in the next part of the pasuk it says, Meitav Sadeu Meitav Karmo Yishalin. That's already the second halacha. We've now finished describing the Maisa Hezek. Now we talk about Tashlum. Now logically, the halacha of Shuma is halacha in what? In Tashlumin. It's not halacha in the Maisa Hezek. Whereas the halacha of Lafuke Rishus Harabim, that describes the scenario of the Hezek itself. So the strange thing is that this Pasuk Ubir B'Stei Acher appears not in the section of Tashlumin, but in this, which is appropriate if you tell me how to shots up to Tashlumin, how to evaluate it, but rather it appears at the beginning of the Pasuk in describing the actual act of Hezek. If the pasuk only wanted to teach me the halacha of Tashlumin and Shuma, is that it should have said lichtov rachmona gavi tashlumin, quote unquote, meitav sadehu meitav karma yishalim biste acher, meaning agav ste acher. Lovely, the cause of Rachmana Gabi Ubir. Why did the pasuk B'Steyachar appear at the beginning of this presentation of the Torah, namely in the context of the Maisa Hezek? Shma mino tarte. We must derive two dinim. The thrust of the pasuk Ubir B'Steyachar is halachin tashlumin, and that's telling you that the shum has to be agav steyachar. But why did the Torah place this pasuk of B'Steyachar at the beginning of this presentation, namely in the context of the Maisa Hezek, describing the Maisa Hezek as taking place b'stei acher? Here the word acher means chavero. It's the privately owned sada of the Nizak, but if it's in a public domain, you're potter. So the bottom line is that from this three-word verse, or section of the verse, of Ubir b'stei acher, we can derive not one halacha, but two halachas. One halacha in the Maisa Hezek, for which you're chayiv, and that's the Maisa Hezek in Stei Acher, which means Stei Chavero, privately owned, as opposed to Rishus Aram. And number two, Halacha in Tashlumin, in how we evaluate the Hezek, and how much money does the owner of the Shar, or the owner of the Tzon, have to pay. Heichi Shamina. Now, I thought the answer to Heichi Shamina is written in the Mishnah. Meaning, ask yourself how much a Beit Saw has devaluated on the market based on this hezek of a half an aruga or an aruga, whatever was destroyed. But the Gemara says even that's too harsh. Even that's too much of a hefsek for the mazik. I don't know why the Gemara, Rabbi Sachlitz, you may remember I asked you this question 2 days ago. Why is the halacha so compassionate for the mazik? That's a question we still haven't answered yet. Amar Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina, let's be mekil even one step further on behalf of the mazik, meaning, you know, the mazik here has a defense attorney. You know, you pay a lawyer good money if you are the defendant, you know, to try to cut the losses. And Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina, in my opinion, is the greatest defense attorney, defense lawyer on behalf of the mazik. Now, what does he say? Saw bishishim saw. Don't ask yourself how much is the value of a saw 50 by 50, and then figure out how much that saw was devaluated. No. You're not selling a saw. You're selling 1/60th of 60 saw.
What?
1/60th of 60. So take a field that's 60 saw large, figure out how much you would pay for that, how much the buyer would pay for that. Okay? And we'll explain in just a minute. And then, once you have that sum, divide it by 60, right? So let's say that a 60 saw field would sell for $60,000. Then a 1 saw would sell for $1,000. And ask yourself, how much would a field that sold for $1,000 be devaluated by the loss of this, I'll call it an aruga, this patch of fruits?
Isn't that mathematically the same?
What do you say?
Isn't mathematically about the same thing? Instead of one bit, so you take 60.
Oh, so let me explain what is the significance of marketing a field that's 60 star? Okay? Here's the deal. Okay? Now I'm going to read, you know, you can look in Rashi, but I think he simplifies it a little bit, so I'm going to read it from him. He says the following: In your shumu beis saw levado, if you would evaluate a beis saw, the mazik is going to take a major loss. Why? Nobody sells a beis saw. Again, you have to assume the reality here. I'm not a historian, I'm not a sociologist or an economist, I don't know. But the reality he's working with is that nobody sells a beis saw. Why? It's too small. Okay. Now, if you're in the market to buy something, then the law of supply and demand tells me, dictates, that something that's rarely on the market will demand a higher price. Fascinating. When you sell a base saw, now you might ask me, why doesn't anybody bother to sell a base saw? There are very few buyers for a base saw. basically, the rich people will buy larger spans, larger areas, larger farms. They won't buy a base saw. A base saw is relatively small. So who's the market to buy a base saw? A poor person, an ani. An ani doesn't have much money, unfortunately, to buy, you know, a field. But yet he's desperate to buy a field. I mean, he's going to have to eke out his living and support his family from one single base saw. And it's very rarely on the market. People don't bother selling a base saw. Since it's rarely up on the market, that jacks up the price. I don't know if anybody here are into auctions or collections. You know, I don't recommend it, but if you're into buying art, right? So the, let's say certain artists never come up on the market. You know, you will not find a Rembrandt on the market. And I promise you, if a Rembrandt goes for sale, every last rich art collector in the world is standing online, waiting to bid for the Rembrandt. Follow what I mean? So in a case of a base saw, paradoxically, not because it's a Rembrandt, but out of because it's such a small area, it demands a very high price. And therefore, the mazik is going to suffer too much, so says Rav Yossi Rav Chanina. However, if you're not selling the base saw per se, but you're selling a field at 60 saw, a lot of people, a lot of buyers are out there on the market looking for a field of that sort. Who nimkar, he says, if it's a base saw, nimkar biyosem eriko, that jacks up the price. But rather, let's look at a karka gedola shel shishim saw. Shishim saw will command a, let's say, an average price, I don't know, maybe a lower price, but certainly lower than a base saw. And therefore, when you take a base saw as a fraction of 1 over 60, of 60 saw, then you're reducing the price of a saw. If you were to sell a saw per se, high price. If you sell 60 saw, you get the norm, you know, the medium price. One saw of 60 is less than one saw per se. Rav Yane Omar, Tarkav Bishishim Tarkabayim. Tarkabayim. A Tarkav is a half a saw, and Shishim Tarkabayim is 30 saw. So instead of evaluating, as Rabbi Yossi would have it, a field of 60 saw, how much we get on the market, and then divided by 60 to get one base saw, what would be the market price for 30 saw, and then take 1/30th of 30 saw? Again, well, let's read the note. He says, "She'ein mishayim b'shishim saw she'saw the gedola midai, b'chdei she'yikna oso adam beinani." He says, "Uktan midai b'shvil hamashuba minachasim." He says that, why does Rav Yanai reject Rav Yossi, 60 saw? He says that 60 saw is being too lenient on the mazik and too harsh on the nizak. He becomes the defense lawyer for the nizak, which I like. Why? He says that 60 saw is not going to collect much of a value. Why? Mimanafshach. It's too large of a field for certainly the Aniyim, but even for the Beinonim. Even your middle class buyer finds 60 saw to be way above his price range. Now there's a limited market. If you're limited market, very few buyers, that lowers the price of the field. Erika Namuf Bidai V'yafsid Haniza Ela Machashim Chatzi Saw V'shloshim Saw Zeu Godel Sadal Adam Beinoni. How much does your middle class guy buy, you know, v'shetach, of an area of a field? 30 saw. Take 30 saw, that's where you get the fair price. It's equal, shall we say, equally fair or just to both the mazik and the nizak. Divide the 30 saw by 30. Chizki Omar, he's the one who's going to be most machmir on the mazik. Kelach b'shishim klochen. How much did the animal eat? If the animal ate a kelach, multiply that kelach by 60 klochir, find out the buyer's market for 60 klochir, okay? And that's what he's going to pay. Kama erech ha-nezek b'shetach gadol mimenu b'pishnai. Basically, figure out how much of an area of the field was damaged, multiply that by 60, get a market price for 60 times the area that was damaged, then divide that by 60, and that's what the mazik is going to have to pay.
Why 60 the magic number?
That I don't know. There was a Kabbalah that it's got to be Agav Shishin. And that's what we saw. Take a look back in the Mishnah. Rashi says on the Mishnah, Shomin Sah Ba'osa Sah, the ain't Shomin is Arugal of Vada. Fine. For Achmona Omer Ubir B'stei Acher. Interesting. Rashi on the Mishnah already quotes this Drosha. V'darshina V'gemara Malamish Shomin Osah Agav Sah Dacheres. And then he goes on to present this sheet. Now again, what's strange here is that the Mishnah itself doesn't have the base saw evaluated agav some larger area. Right? Our Mishnah says base saw, and that's it. It's the Gemara that says that base saw is really 1/60th of 60 saw. Somehow the Gemara understood, it was almost like a Kabbalah, that it's got to be multiplied by 60. I see it's already late. The Gemara actually ends very shortly. So if you don't mind, we'll just finish it up. Meisvei, the Gemara says, I have a braisa that says the opposite. Ochla kav o kabayim, ein omrim tishalim dmehem. We don't say that you have to pay the kav or the kabayim, you know, one bushel or two bushels, 1 pound or 2 pounds. El arono so ki'ilu hi aruga ktana. We imagine that this is a whole patch, a small patch. Umeshayar nosa. How much would an aruga be sold on the market? My love, bifnei atzma. There's no mention of a large expanse whatsoever in this price. Where does the number shishim come in here? So this braisa seems to undermine the entire sugya. Again, if you're going back to our Mishnah, you could say that there's something called a base saw. But now you're multiplying it by 60. Where did you get that from? The Gemara says, lo b'shisha. That basically, in order to understand this Gemara, this braisa, we're going to have to add something to the braisa, and that is what? Shishim. The braisa doesn't say it. And the Gemara is going to consistently do this. Whenever there's no mention of shishim, the Gemara is going to plug in shishim. Like, for example, if you fast forward for a minute, Maskif Lo Rav Huna Bar Manoach, he asks Akasha on this price, it says, V'lo beis kur, v'lo kur mi boile, Elom Rav Huna Bar Manoach, v'shun, hochi toni, ein shomen kav b'fnei atzmo. And then he says, Elo b'shishim. Again, it doesn't say shishim. The Gemara is going to consistently add the word shishim here in order to explain all the prices. Okay, then Rabbi Sarah will stop. So the Brisa says the following. Tan Rabbanan, Ein Shomin Kav Mipnesha Mashbicho V'lo Beis Kar Mipnesha Pogmo. And somebody's losing here through this Shuma. Or somebody's gaining on, you know, unjustifiedly. My kamar, what does it mean? Amar of Papa Hachi kamar. Ein shomin kav bishishim kavim mipneishem ashbiach mazik. We'd be too lenient on the mazik if we were to evaluate a kav by seeing it as 1/60th of 60 kavim. Why is that? The mazik is going to pay very little, because once you multiply it by 60 kavin, who buys 60 kavin? It's too large of a spans. An ani can't buy it, and even a benani can't buy it. On the other hand, the Asher is not going to buy 60 Kavim either. So basically, there's no market for this. And Shishin Kavim, says the Braisa, is going to haul in a very limited price. But rather, what we should do is we should use the saw, and we should evaluate a kav in a saw and a saw in shishim sawim, because as we said before, that's going to be fair to both the mazik and the nizak. V'lo kur b'shishim kur mipneishim pogeim mazik. Now forget about the kav, but let's say you take a car, and if you multiply the car by 60, then the mazik is going to lose, because a rich person would want to buy a karka that's large enough to be 60 kurim, which is a very large span. So again, shishim kabim is what we call nishtaher, nishtahin. There's no market for that. It's too big for an ani or a bein. It's too small for an ashir. But if it's shishim kurim, that would mean that the mazik is going to lose too much, because the wealthy people are looking high and low to buy a field that's as large as shishim kurim, and therefore the asher is going to pay an exorbitant amount of money for this. Maskif lo Rav Huna bar Manoah chai v'lo beis kur v'lo kur mi boile. After all, we should be evaluating a kur, not a beis kur. Elom Rav Huna bar Manoach Mishmeid Rav Acha Pereid Rav Ika Hachik Tani Ein Shomin Kav Bifnei Atzmo Mipnei Shemashbiach HaNizak. The Nizak will be collecting too much of a compensation. It'll be too harsh on the Mazik, because a Kav is going to bring in a lot of money. V'lo Kav Bibes Kur Mipnei Shepogim Nizak. And if you take a kav in an area of a base kur, we said before that the asher is looking for that amount, he'll pay a very high price. And therefore, we're talking about a base kur, not shishim kur. Shishim kurim is going to bring in a very high price because it's rare, and that's what the rich people look for. Now we're talking about a base kur, shepogem nizak. Base kur is going to be a low price, because it's nishtaher and nishtahin, as we said. Ella b'shishim. Finally, ahu gavra dekotz kasba mechavre. There was a person who cut down a tree, a date tree of his friend. Also, l'kami d'reish galusa. The case came in front of the Rosh HaGolus. What do they call that in English, the Rosh HaGolus? Exilark. Amalei. The Reish Galusa said, "L'didi chazli, I know exactly what the market value is of a tree of that dekel, and it's worth tlosa bekina havikaime. If you have 30 dekolim together, then it brings in a price havishavu mea zuzi, 100 zuz. Zil havle, pay 33 1/3 zuzin, 1/3 of mea zuzin. Tlosa utlosa vitilsa." So it comes out that the Reish Galusa was toveh him the exact value of the hezek itself. And the Shita Mekubetza says the reason for that is because the Torah was only mekil in Maman HaMazik. Like, for example, we saw Bir B'Steyacher as Shomen Al Gav Steyacher, but not in Adam HaMazik. Here he actually cut down the tree. I cannot tell a lie, right? Omar, so the Mazik said, Gabi Reish Galusa didoy dina de parso lomali. Why should I go to be judged, says the Mazik, by the Reish Galusa? He's being too harsh on me. That's called dina de parsi. You know, that's a negative, kind of pejorative way of judgment. Also, come to Rav Nachman. I better go in front of Rav Nachman. He'll judge me fairly. Omalei. So Rav Nachman turns to him and he says, Bishishim, let's evaluate this dekel times 60, which obviously be a fraction of what the Reish Galusa would have been mechayev. It was 33 1/3 zuzin. Omalei Rava turns to Rav Nachman. He says, "In Omru Beniske Maman, Yomru Beniske Gufo." The Gzeiros HaKosuv that says that you don't pay damage per se, but rather agav shishim. That's only in Niske Mamono, like we saw it in the Parsha of Bir B'Steach of Shane. But Niske Gufo, Adam Amazik, why should we be lenient in the case of Adam Amazik? And basically what Rav is telling Rav Nachman is really supporting the Reish Kalusa. Only Abayilu Rava, B'Niske Gufo, Mai Datich. What is your view about Niske Gufo? Because again, Rava was the one who said that in Niske Gufo, we should be more harsh with him. We don't have the kula of Shishin. So he says, Mai Datich, in other words, where did you derive it from? Desani, we learned in Ebraisa, Hamavkir Karmo Shel Chavero Smadar. If a person destroys a vineyard of his friend, smadar means when it was at a very early stage of the grapes, you know, small grapes growing. Rono so kamaisa yofa kodem lechem kami yofa liachar mikan. The Brisa says that we evaluate the vine, the vine itself to see how much it was devaluated. For ilu b'shishim lo ketani, the Brisa doesn't mention a word about shishim, and the answer is because here it's adam hamazik begufa. And this should be the source of Rava. Says Abai, no, that's not a good source and a good raya. Otu gabi behemto nami milo tanya kai gavna. Remember, we had rices before where shishim was left out, but we're always going to plug in shishim. And Abai illustrates this with a brisa. The brisa says, katma nitiya. If he cut down someone's young sapling, Rabbi Yossi Omer, Gozrei Gzeros, those who imposed a knas, Shebi Yerushalayim, that's a Mishnah in Ksuvus, that's Admon and Hanan ben Avshalom, Omer, they say, Netiya Bashnosa, if it was a one-year-old sapling, you pay Shtei Kesef. Bashtei Shanim, it's a little bit older, Arba Kesef, you pay double the amount. Ochlo Chaziz, if the animal ate Shachas, means it was cut down in one-third of its growth, and it hasn't yet gotten a chance to develop fully, is Rabbi Yossi Agdili Omer Nidon B'Meshuyah Shebo. We have to evaluate what this Shachas would be worth in the harvest period, you know, months and months down the line, if it had grown to full capacity. And that's the Hefseid, which is a much larger Hefseid that the Mazik has to pay for cutting down the Shachas. Chachom Omer Romo So Kamoisa Yofer V'Kamehi Yofer. Chacham are not willing to go as far as Rabbi Yossi Aglili and say that we should view the Shachas as if it would reach its full maximum capacity and that's what he has to pay. But rather, let's just evaluate how much damage he caused now to this karka, because the karka, if it has Shachas in it, is worth more than if it has no Shachas in it. But one thing is clear, no one in the Brisa mentions a word about Shishim. And it seems like we're really being harsh on the Adam HaMazik here. Right. But the only problem is that the Brisa continues, Achla Smadar, which seems to be indicating that we're talking about a behema, an animal that ate Smadar, meaning these grapes that are in the early stage. And Rabbi Yeshua Omer Rowan, this is already on the New Testament, Alf, Rowan Osan Ki'ilu Hein Anovim She'omdos Li Botzer. Even though it's only smother in the early stages, we look at it as if it was fully ripened on the tree. Chachomim omrim roim kama hoise yofe v'kami yofe. And that's a cool on the mazik. He doesn't have to pay, you know, the potential, the maximum capacity. But in any event, one thing is clear. Nobody mentioned shishim here, and here we're talking about a behemoth. So you see that this brisa cannot serve as a proof text, as a source for Rava's conclusion that in Adam HaMazik you pay exactly what you damaged, but rather you evaluate it like shishim, looked like in the case of Behema. And what Abai is trying to indicate here is that consistently the brisa leaves out shishim. Again, I don't know why the brisa leaves out shishim, how it got dropped, but nevertheless we always have to add shishim into the brisa.